your master brothers at least 36 or 37 years ago, so there's no danger in my repeating myself in front of this particular crowd anyway, even though I think Dr. Escrow has been here 34, 35 years. The second thing is we will study Masechet Ketubot, which, as you all know, sometimes called a Shas Katan, because it contains a sampling of topics from all over Shas. And I'm going to take advantage of that. That is, last year we studied labor law and focused on one issue this year for the full 6 months of the first semester, and then sort of continued at Harvard for the entire year, and there were some complaints that things were getting a little boring or over-specialized by focusing on one subject all the time. So I'm going to do the exact opposite this year, and undoubtedly get the complaint, things are too scattered. So I'm going to use Masechet Ketubot as an excuse. That is, we will take some topic as it arises in the Gemara and develop it. And since there's so many different topics that come up, we will have plenty of things to choose from. The third thing that I want to mention before we get started is that, for better or for worse, I think we're going to have to get used to learning to reading the Gemara differently. That is, with the advent of computerized texts, the familiar Daf Gemara will probably be supplanted by computer printouts and eventually by a computer screen. I don't know that this year or next year we will give up books altogether, but as a partial step in that direction, I produced the materials here, printing off from my Macintosh mostly, rather than Xeroxing from the actual printed text of the Gemara, which means, of course, that it looks different. You know, with Rashi and Tosfot on both sides, you don't have that anymore. You just have the dull, straight, linear text. But on the other hand, you have the advantage that you can just type on your computer, pick out the passage that you want, and print it, and not have to run to the Xerox machine. So here are the materials. Just pass these around for tonight. We'll start with the Gemara. Most of you have Gemara, so we'll actually read in the old-fashioned Gemara, but all of the other references from other portions of Gemara we will read from a computer printout rather than from an actual text. Okay. So let's begin. The Mishnah says, the Tulani Sekliyam or the Ivi Almanaliyam Hamishi. Virgin bride is previously unmarried woman is married on Wednesday, that is the eve of Wednesday afternoon or the eve of Thursday, whereas a widow is married on Thursday. And the Mishnah explains the reasons. Shepa'amayim b'shabbat batei dinin yoshvim ba'ayorot. In the small towns, the courts were in session only 2 days a week, on Mondays and on Thursdays. She'im hayalau ta'anat betulim hayamashkim lebetin. If he had a claim that his wife had been unfaithful prior to the marriage, then he can immediately take the case to court the following morning without delay, and the matter would be settled. So first of all, let me remind you that this is talking about a time in which the Kedushin and the Nisuin were separated by a large interval of time. 2 years ago, we studied this issue in detail, and we'll have to get back to it maybe next year or maybe this year after, but our current custom of having the Kiddushin and the Nisuin occur within 5 or 10 minutes of each other, all standing in front of the rabbi and the witnesses in front of the ceremony, is something that is relatively late. certainly around the 10th or the 11th century, maybe even later than that. And in the olden days, the period between these two could have been quite great, as much as a year, as we'll see a little bit later in the model. The reasons for this, I think, are cyclical, but over long-range cycles. I think we mentioned this when we studied the subject many years ago, that in some form or another, the idea of a betrothal is necessary, as opposed to the actual marriage, and then the betrothal becomes more and more serious, and then it's practically, in many of its respects, akin to marriage. So at the time that the Gemara was talking about, the situation was that the Kiddushin, although it wasn't a consummated marriage, was in fact made the woman into a nefesh. That is, she was considered as being legally married for the purposes of not being allowed to be involved with someone else. And then a marriage, as far as the financial obligations and consummation of a marriage and so on, that took place later, and that was the Nisuin. And apparently, at the time that the Mishnah was dealing with these problems, that had already fallen into some form of pathological situation, that there were enough cases where the bride decided that she preferred someone else to the husband to render this into a sufficiently difficult problem that it should be brought to court. Rashi says, he explained, why should the courts be interested in this? Rashi explains, let's read Rashi. Rashi says that you do not want to, why should we be interested? If the husband doesn't want to bring a case, why should we stimulate him to bring a case by making it convenient? Rashi says, because since the woman becomes a sota, prohibited to him if she actually committed adultery during this lengthy period of betrothal, or kiddushin, what you want to call it, and since you don't want the husband to become calm down on this issue, v'im yeshlo shahut bein tayin, yeshlo chush, Rashi says, shema yitpayetz. And perhaps she actually had committed adultery, that she becomes prohibited to resume relations. A woman who has committed adultery is not allowed to resume marital relations with her husband. If he can come to court immediately, etc. Since the court is meeting on Mondays and on Thursdays, why is Wednesday better than Sunday? And that, of course, the Gemara goes into immediately. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So the Gemara is giving an entirely different slant on this Mishnah, namely that there is a 12-month period between the betrothal where the husband is entitled to get his finances in order so he can begin to support a wife. And if the Gemara is explaining the Mishnah, if that 12-month period happens to terminate on a Sunday, then the husband is still not liable for financial support of the wife until Wednesday, because those 3 days are not days that are normally used for marriage. And therefore, since the court has decreed that there is no marriage until Wednesday, he is not liable for those 3 days. But the Gemara asks, Amar Rav Yosef, Mori Davwa, Tali Tanya B'dalo Tanya. You're giving an explanation of something from something that, you're explaining, you're making this Mishnah depend on something that hasn't actually been stated. So the Gemara quibbles with the formulation of the question. Hai Tanya v'hai Tanya. Hai Tanya v'hai lo Tanya. Ha Tanya v'ha Tanya. Both of these statements are part of the Mishnah, namely that our current Mishnah about the day of the week of the marriage and the fact that the husband has to support when begin support when the 12-month period has elapsed. Ella toli Tanya de mafaresh ta'ama. But the Tanya de lo mafaresh ta'ama. Here, our Mishnah explicitly explains why Wednesdays was picked, namely that you can go to court the next morning. Why are you giving an additional explanation? Ella I itmar hafi itmar. The explanation should be as an answer to the following question. The answer is good, it's just the question wasn't formulated correctly. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. מפני מה אמרו בתילה נוסעת ליום הרביעי, שאם היה לו טענת בתולים, היה משכים לבית דין. And now, ותינשא ביחד בשבת. What's the matter with Sunday? The court's in session Monday morning. שאם היה לו טענת בתולים, היה משכים לבית דין. So the Gemara says, שקדו חכמים על תקנת בנות ישראל, שיהי תרח בסעודה שלושה ימים. אחד בשבת השני, בשבת השלישי בשבת, וברעירי כמוסה. Since the caterers can't get a meal together, a decent banquet together, in just one day after Shabbat, therefore the husband, apparently in those days it was the husband or the husband's family who would pay for the expenses of the marriage banquet, they should have 3 days in which to get everything organized, and therefore the marriage would be on Wednesday. If you force them to be married on Sunday, it's going to be skimpy. So that's the reason. Okay. Ve'achshav sheshaninu shakdu. Since we now have the rule that the reason why the marriage does not take place on Sunday is that there should be a decent banquet, אותה ששנינו הגיע הזמן ולא נשאו אוכלות משלו ואוכלות בתרומה, the Mishnah that says that if the 12-month period has elapsed, then the husband is obligated to support the wife, even though the marriage has not actually taken place, הגיע הזמן ואחד בשבת, if the 12-month period has elapsed, has ended on a Sunday, מתוך שאינו יכול לקנוס, אינו מעלה למזונות. He by rabbinical legislation is not to have the marriage take place on Sunday, but there are now these extra 3 days, he is not obligated to support his wife, even though it's now more than 12 months. Lefichach, and now the Gemara adds a generalization to this principle. Lefichach, chalahu, if he fell ill, o shechaltahi, or she fell ill, or she became a nida, eino ma'ale lamazona. In other words, if there are other causes why the marriage has been delayed, these other causes being beyond his control, he is also not liable. So that's more or less the conclusion of the Gemara. The ika the boy lami boy. This last statement, namely that the husband is not to be held liable by if the marriage is delayed because of force majeure, is also, in an alternative version, is asked as a question. Chalahu mahu. What happens if the husband falls ill? Does he nevertheless have to pay or support his wife even though the marriage has to be delayed or not? Hotam ta'ama mai mishum da'anis. Why, in the case where the 12-month period ends on a Sunday, he's not obliged to pay because it's not his fault. He is forced away. Bachi nami huda anis. Odil mahatam anis betakanta da takino la rabbanan. Perhaps there he's not held liable because it's a legislation that prevents him from getting married. And therefore, these extra 3 days have been, it's just a modification in the legislation that says 12 months. You have to modify that legislation to mean 12 months plus whatever days are necessary to make it come into a Wednesday. But perhaps when the husband falls ill, so what? It's his responsibility. He undertook to support his wife after 12 months, to support his bride after a 12-month period. So whether the marriage has taken place or not, perhaps he's still liable. The imtim siloma chalahu ma'alelo mezonot chalta hi mahu. If you're going to say that if the husband falls ill, he has to pay because it's his responsibility. What if the wife falls ill, so that the delay in the marriage is stemming from her side rather than from his side? Matzi amala anoha ka'amina. The husband can say, I'm willing to marry you, and you're the one that's delaying it, and therefore I shouldn't have to pay. Odilma matzi amalei nistapcha sadeh. Perhaps to the reverse. The fact that the woman can say to the man, it's your hard luck. Since I'm the bride here, and you've undertaken the responsibility, and if I've fallen ill, it's just a piece of bad luck on your part. Ve'imtim saloma amrala nistapcha sadeh. That she has this claim, that if she falls ill, he's still liable. Piyosan nidan mahu. What if she becomes menstruous during this period? Vishad vesta loti boila v'lo matzi amrila nistakhav sadeo. If the menstruation took place on her regular cycle, then perhaps we would say that it's her job to figure all of this out in advance, and therefore she did the calculation incorrectly. She should bear the burden. Kiti boila shelo b'shat vesta. But suppose that she had an irregular bleeding. My kevan de lo b'shat vesta he matzi amri leinis tapchasa deyu odil ma kevan de ika nashi de kamashanya vestayu b'shat kishat vesta dami. Pashat Ravach. Ravach answered this: a yezman b'lom nisku. If they got married, if the time came and they were not married, ochlot mishalov yochlot b'tuma. Lo nasu lo ktani ela lo nisu. Peki dami. Either kamiyat van inu amay yochlot mishalov yochlot b'tuma. Ela lav de itnis. Ki had the kahagav nevu ktani yochlot mishalov yochlot b'tuma. Amar Ravashi le'olam emlocha kol unsa lo ochla. So the Gemara's final conclusion to this question is that under all circumstances, if the delay in the marriage is not due to a deliberate interference on the part of the husband, whether he falls ill or she falls ill, or she menstruates, or what have you, whatever the delay is, in all situations, the husband is relieved of responsibility. That's the text of the Gemara, and now I'm going to use this to try, however, to discuss a side issue, as I said that I would. The side issue that I want to discuss is this claim of Nistapcha Sadeh. The Gemara indicates in the course of the discussion that in alternative contract situations, when an untoward event occurs in the contract, the other party can say, you buy something from, you buy a car from a used car dealer, and it breaks down as you drive out of the lot, the dealer tells you it's your hard luck. You had an unfortunate piece of bad luck, it's not my responsibility. That's the claim of Nistapcha Sadeh. Of course, in the case of a used car dealer, there's a presumption of fraud. But we want to deal with the situation where there's no presumption of fraud. So let me repeat. The Gemara here says that Nistapcha Sadeh does not apply. The claim, your hard luck, the purchaser's hard luck. In Latin law, it's called caveat emptor, the buyer beware. This claim does not apply here as far as the husband, if you think of him as the purchaser and the wife as the goods, does not apply here. The husband does not have to bear the responsibility of support of the wife if there's a delay of the marriage, which is not due to his fault. But under other circumstances, the presumption is that the person who is in the position of the purchaser, the buyer, he has to bear the responsibility of untoward events. Okay? And what I would like to discuss is the nature of this particular law. Okay, so what I've gotten first is in these handouts are the relevant materials in the Gemara. And as you will see, it's a little hard on the eyes to read the Gemara from a computer printout, but the advantage to this is that with no additional effort, you can print out the Sino translation as well. So
things.
For those of you who want to review this material at home, I also actually provided both the text of Yuma and the Cencino translation, all printed out on the Macintosh.
You have this on CD-ROM?
CD-ROM, yes. One just has to get used to a new visual situation. So, the subject matter is clear. To what extent and when is a... Who bears the risk? Who bears the burden of risk in a situation when there is no fraud, but nevertheless some untoward event occurred in the country? So, the second quotation is a few pages down on the page that I've numbered 2, which is a Gemara in Gittin. We'll have to deal with this Gemara as far as some slightly other portions are concerned, so I quote it a little bit more than the thing that's relevant today, because next week we'll need a different portion of this. But if we take a look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the bottom at the very end of the line, the Gemara says, this is Gemara now. Doesn't look like it, but that's what it is. Hahu gavra, you have it on page 2? Hahu gavra de zobin hara lachavre. Someone sold a plot of land, a field, to his friend. Kabil ale kol unsil de mityale. He undertook to guarantee this property against all possible evil fates that would befall it. From the bottom, count up. Okay. Lesof, afiku bonahal. After the sale, the government decided to divert a river, and now his land is gone. Ata lekameda rabina. So the buyer went with his warranty to Rabina. Amarle, Rabina decided, zil shafile, pay the man. He said to the Rabina, decided, pay the seller, because you undertook to guarantee this land against all possible damages that might take place. This is a completely rare event that the seller could not possibly have thought of when he was willing to write this guarantee. He was willing to write a guarantee against all possible legal claims, against possibly marauders, against damage that might normally take place in fields, but the idea that the government would come in and divert the Euphrates River and swamp his land out by building a dam somewhere, this was certainly something that the seller had never intended to guarantee against. Il galgel milta, this problem continued to be discussed, and it came in front of Rava. This is indeed an extremely rare form of accident, and therefore the seller did not intend, had not even considered the possibility that he was guaranteeing the buyer against this type of an event. Eifei Rava Lavina. If a man gives a get to his wife and says that this get should be valid if I don't recover from my current illness, and while he was still ill, the house fell in, or he was bitten by a snake, so when the husband wrote the get, he meant to say that he expected to die from this illness, and in order to save his wife from problems of yibum and so on, he was going to give her a get that would be effective before marriage, but he didn't consider the possibility that a snake would crawl into the house and bite him. Nevertheless, this is considered a get, even though this was not taken into account by the husband. Amale rovo ve'emon me'resha eino get. A similar halacha in the beginning of the Mishnah says, if the man says, Hareze yitach im amot michol izeh, instead of lo amot michol izeh, the halacha is that it's not a get, And so there's some sort of a contradiction here between the Reisha and the Seifa. Omalei Rav Acha Meidifti L'Rabina U'Mishum Dekashe Reisha Seifa L'Omot Bina Tilufta. Because there's some difficulty, some internal contradiction in the Mishnah, does that necessarily mean that we can't bring a raya from it? No tufta mina. Amalei in. Since the Mishnah, the Kavan, the Kashi, Reisha, Asefa, lo itno beinirosho mishavshtatihi. Zil batasva. Since there's an internal contradiction in the Mishnah, and it hasn't been resolved by discussion in the Beit Midrash, then you just have to use common sense rather than trying to cite the previous sources. Okay, here's a second case. Rav Popa v'Rav Huna v'Reidu Rav Yoshua Zavin Shum Shini Agira de Nahar Malka. Rav Huna and Rav Yoshua bought sesame at the banks of the Nahar Malka. The Nahar Malka was a major canal built between the Tigris and the Euphrates. It's called the Nahar Malka. It wasn't a real river, it was a canal. Agro Malki Lavuni. They hired a barge man to carry the sesame from one side to the other. Kiblu alayu kol unsa b'mityahu. The barge man agreed to guarantee against all possible accidents. L'sof istakyo nahar malka. Before they managed to actually transport the sesame, the canal was closed down. No more canal, there's no way of getting the material across. Amar lohu aguri hamri afkinu nehilan dehakibut elafik kol umsa demityan. You'll hire some donkeys and carry it across by caravan, since you agreed to bear the responsibility again. You assured us that you were going to make this transport and make it valid no matter what happens. Atula kame doraba. Amar lohu kalaki chiyuri mishalchi glim mishalchi glimi deinchi. You are spoiled people who are trying to take the shirts off people's banks. This is an unexpected event that the bargemen never could have intended to mean, that the river would disappear underneath them. They're bargemen and not caravan leaders, and therefore they are not responsible. So the Gemara here is establishing a principle that even if there's an explicit clause or a guarantee against all possible untoward events, if indeed an extremely unlikely event has occurred, which the guarantor could not possibly take into consideration, he's not to be held liable against. Okay? That's the Gemara in Yitin. Now, let's go to the next case, which is really in the Tosfot and not in the Gemara, and they haven't yet sent me the CD-ROM with the Tosfot on it. They promised to do it by Rosh Hashanah, but there's a delay, some kind of glitch in their program. So to get the printout from the Tosfot, we'll have to wait a month, I guess. They said now, beginning of October, but I don't know all those things. The case here is something that we did learn in recent years, and this is a case of also a rental. Here, so this is my page, I guess, what is it? 3. A person rented a donkey for transport. So you had a large donkey rental service, budget or rent a donkey or whatever have you, budget a rental service. And in the course of when the person rented the donkey, it was picked up by the corvée. The government that needed desperately a supply of donkeys, presumably for some war they were fighting or other, and therefore this man was now left without his donkey. Can he go back to the donkey rental service and demand a replacement? And under what terms? Okay. So the Gemara makes some distinction between whether the donkey was picked up while it was still garaged in the barn, or whether it was picked up on the road. Okay, and let's take a look in Tosfos here, the major Tosfos that I've xeroxed. Ella v'nira, do you see that about 5 lines above where the Tosfos is wide? V'nira kepevush Rabbeinu Hanani. V'nira kepevush Rabbeinu Hanani.
The explanation of this, Tosus says, seems to be that of Rabbeinu Tana, the Mefarish. Im v'derech halicha, if shehanagriya ein machapsin bebatim, ela kishepogim v'derech, v'hainu derech halichata, if the donkey was seized on the road, meaning that the government seizure agents weren't systematically going to all of the throughout the country, going to all of the barns and looking out for donkeys, but rather it was just randomly taking donkeys on the way. Omer lo maskir harei shalach lefanecha. The renter, the agency, can say that you just have to deal with what you have. The matzi amale mazal chagara. That it's your bad luck, your bad star, that caused the donkey that you rented from our agency to be seized. She'ilu haita babayit, because if the donkey was in the house at that time, lo haita nitel. Va'filo ina chozera. The lo dami lemeita, da muchach tamani. The hamuchach the mazla de degomen, because here it's proof pudding that it was the bad luck of the renter which caused this donkey to be seized. But if the donkey was not seized by a random search, if there's a systematic search, and therefore the government is going to seize all donkeys, she'oz lo mazalo shel socher gorem chayav lahamid lo chamo acher. Lasot malachto, la'atar afilu, da'afilu chozer ta'nagri ma'chamor le'temaret, ma'chamorukam. Okay, so Tosus is making the distinction between whether the cause of this untoward event is due to the fact that the rentor, or purchase, the analog of the purchaser, is unlucky. And since it's his consistent bad luck which causes the donkey to be seized, you can't make the rental agency liable. But if it's a systematic search where luck doesn't come into it at all, then the rental agency has to provide a substitute donkey immediately, because it's clear that this is not the bad luck of this individual rentor which is causing the donkey to be seized, but rather it's a general phenomenon, and therefore it's the seller's responsibility. Tosfos is very clear on this point. I think it's safe to say that none of us around this table would accept this as a good argument, but Tosfos is very clear on this point. And also, as we will see, the Gemara and other people are clear on this point. And what it reflects, of course, is a change in mentality about how we regard luck. I think this is important to understand. I mean, maybe we should make the point now because it will be illustrated as we go along. I mean, when we use the word lucky, for example, and I say that Dr. Isserow is very lucky, what does that mean? I mean, suppose he wins the lottery, so he's lucky. What does that mean? When we use today the word lucky, what's the meaning of that word when we use it today? An unexpected good fortune. When you say that a person is accident prone, what does that mean?
It's in his character.
Yeah, he's sloppy, he has not good muscular control, right? In other words, today, when we use the word luck and use the word lucky, it's exactly in the form of unexpected good fortune. It's not a property of a person. Other things like being rich or being smart or being tall or being short, those are properties of an individual. And maybe even being accident prone is a property of an individual, because what we mean to say is that he has certain mental sloppiness or physical incapacities or so on that gets him into trouble. But that's not the original meaning of the word luck. I mean, if you asked someone in the 14th or the 13th or the 15th century what lucky meant, it meant that it was he was a person on whom the goddess of luck smiled. That he, in his nature, was a lucky person. Being lucky or being unlucky was a trait. It was not untoward or unexpected good fortune. Fortune itself was not something random the way we
look at it today. I mean, if you look at something like even the early books on mathematics, the earliest book on mathematical probability, like Cardano's book, which was sort of before the development of Fermat and Pascal and those people, I mean, that does a lot of computations, and then there's a whole several chapters on how to cheat. Now, why is it reasonable to learn how to cheat? Well, I mean, look, if I'm going into a boxing ring with, I don't know who the current boxing champion was, but say with Muhammad Ali at his prime, obviously this is an unfair engagement, because he is a much better boxer than I, so I better learn some skills to overcome a natural disadvantage. If being lucky is a personal trait, then cheating is just overcoming a natural disadvantage. It's not something which is necessarily morally bad. And this is, as we will see as we proceed, that this was certainly the view of towards good fortune and luck prior to the 18th and the 19th century. It's one of the paradoxes of the development of science that as determinism became more and more into force, the notion of a random phenomenon and completely non-deterministic notion of probability came into existence at roughly the same time. The book by Hatcher, is that his name? On the history of... Mel, what's the name of that? On the Taming of Chance, I think it's called, in which he discusses precisely this point of the notion of he wrote several books, I'm trying to which one it was, on this notion. But we'll see it. For example, let's take a look at our next source in De Morgan. We learned a bit of this last year also, but let's take a look at it again. So this is number four. Let's look at the very top. Hamakabel sadeh mechavero, someone rents a field. So he's going out. So the various different ways in which one had tenant farmers, right? Some were actually made paid in form of a portion of the crop, other paid rent. Hamakabel sadeh mechavero beyachlach agav, onishtefa, and someone rented a field from his friend and it was eaten up by locusts or other blasted away. Im makat medinahu, manakelo michatikuro. If this is a makat medina, that this is a widespread disaster, then the tenant can deduct from his rent. He is not obligated to pay the full rental. In other words, the landlord has to bear the burden of this disaster. Ve'im eina makat medina, ein menakelo mechikura. If it is not a widespread disaster, that it's just this particular field that happened to have been blasted away or eaten by the grasshoppers or locusts and so on, then the tenant has to pay the full rental and it's not the landlord's responsibility. Clear-cut mission. What's the reason for this mission? What's the explanation here? Yeah, so as we will see, the Gemara apparently is interpreting the Mishnah this way. Let's take a look at the portion that I've underlined. Nishtadfu kol stotav shel machkir. Suppose, in fact, this landlord is a large landholder. It's not just one single field that he has, but he has many, many fields. And all of the landlord's fields were damaged, but it wasn't a general event affecting all fields. Nishtadfu kol stotav shel machkir. Nishtadof nami ha bahadayim. V'lo ishtadof ruba debago. Suppose we're in the following situation, that the landlord has, say, 20 or 30 fields, and all 30 fields of the landlord have been eaten by the locusts.
But most of the fields in the valley have not been eaten by the wolves. And this particular tenant is now one of the 20 or 30 farmers who's rented from the meadow. By Mi aminan kevan de lo shtaduf ruba de vaga lo menakile. Do we say that since this entire valley has not been destroyed, the landlord does not bear the burden of the disaster? O dilma kevan de shtaduf kuli arate, matzi avale hay mishul matachti daku. Since all of the fields of the landlord have been damaged, the tenant can say to him, it's your cause, it's your bad luck that's caused it. Because it's all of your fields which have been destroyed. So Gemara gives a strange answer. If it was my hard luck, at least one of my fields would have remained. So it doesn't say explicitly what the halacha would be that if the landlord had 30 fields and 2 fields of his were saved and the remaining 28 were destroyed. The implication from this passage of the Gemara is again that it is, as we said before, the determination of whose bad luck has caused this particular damage, and the landlord complained that if all of my fields have been destroyed, it's not my bad luck. And therefore, at least one or two of my fields would have been destroyed. I should emphasize that there's an entirely different explanation of the Mishnah, which is one that is, I think, meets our sensibilities and might be hidden in the question of the Gemara, not in the Gemara's answer. And that is, and of course it's certainly borne out in many of the tshuvot that we learned last year and 2 years ago on the question of Makat Medina, and there's an entirely different interpretation of Makat Medina, that in the case of a general disaster, you want to shift the burden of cost to the people that are most able to support. In other words, a deep pockets form of insurance. Normally, if it's an individual case between a landlord and a tenant, you want to uphold the notion of contract and therefore force the tenant to pay even though it's an individual hardship. But in the case where there's a general disaster and therefore the community has to look out for all of the people who have been harmed, then the landlords who are economically in a better position to bear the burden are forced to bear the burden as a matter of if you like, general insurance or yes, do you have a question?
What is that answer to? It's not his capability to ensure that his bad luck doesn't ruin everything. I would have left something.
No. He's saying this is proof that it was not luck. That it was not my bad luck. Because the person never is so unlucky that all of his fields are destroyed. That's what.
Why? My question is that presumption. Why is that?
He quotes a pasuk to that extent. To that effect. Bad luck means that only a little is left over. But if all of them are wiped out, then that implies that somehow or other this person has just an accumulation of the bad luck of the tenants, but not his own bad luck. Yes? Yeah, but there was a case where on top of it there was an explicit clause. You see, here we're dealing in a situation where there were no explicit clauses, but there the situation got more complicated because the bargeman said, I'm going to be responsible for everything. So it's emphasizing a slightly different point. Okay. Let's go to item number 5 in the Gemara. This is Gemara on the Havas. Mishnah, at the top line. Hamocher yayin lachaveiro behechmitz. Someone sold wine, and it turned sour. Eino chayav achrayuto. The seller is not liable for wine that sours.
But if this man has a reputation for having wine, all of his wine turning sour, areza mekach talut. If he says, I'm selling you sweet wine, then chayav lahamid lo ad ha'atzeret. Then he has to replace the wine at least until Shavuot. V'yashan mishal ashtakad, the phrase yayin yashan means last year's wine, and yushan means at least 3 years old. Okay. I'll let you read all of the detailed text of the Gemara, but if you skip down about six or seven lines, it says, "Upligo de Rav Chiya bar Yosef." That's more than six or seven, something like 10 lines, just eyeballing it. "Upligo de Rav Chiya bar Yosef." The Amar Rav Chiya bar Yosef, "Chamro mazlo de Maregora." That if the turning, the souring, the fermenting of wine is